Listening Dog Media.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Offside Rule. Women's football unlocked.
A big offside rule welcome to Julie Grundy, who assisted Neil Redfern at Doncaster Bells. And we want to go over this, Julie, dredging up the past, but I think it's important that we do. So Donny Bells at the time, I think you need to set the stall as to what sort of team they were. I know that they won the FA Cup six times. They were an established team. What are we talking about in terms of standard?
Well, you're talking, this club is, he's got history in abundance. It was formed in 1969 through females just going around at Bellevue and selling tickets, lost tickets, and that was them. Sheila Edmonds, who was literally the founder of that club, is still in place now as director. And if you ever want to speak about the history of women's football in Doncaster, Sheila is the person to speak to, because she's literally, you know, she's Doncaster Bells through and through. But We always knew about Doncaster Bells, and I know Shaw Tashwell as well. When she started playing, when I started playing, I was 16 when I started playing, it wasn't any youth system involved. And Doncaster Bells was always the history that you always went to. There was, you know, the top team in that time. The history of winning FA Cups and abundance, leagues, there's probably about half that team, maybe three quarters of the team at that time in that era was representing England at the time, which unfortunately wasn't obviously renowned for now, unfortunately. But now, so as we come forward, flying through the years, I actually went to Doncaster Bells back in 2010 after leaving Leeds United. It was a little bit same situation that Doncaster fell into, unfortunately. And that was Julie Chipchase, who is absolute legend of the game, a legacy left behind, unfortunately passed away two or three years ago. Her mentor and mantra was always going to be that Doncaster was going to be a development club. It would be, they'd develop players, but they'd also develop coaches and female coaches as well. So they had, she had a female mentoring programme, and I was part of that, along with Suey Smith, who works the FA now, Emma Coates, who's an U23's head coach, and Selin Edom is now in Norway supporting the Gemma Granger with the head of the Human Resource Performance Team. So that's kind of what that club is about, and for want of a better word, probably the history of that is they are very much a development club, all in all. So my experience of the team, obviously, you know, there's been a long time since the club had won anything. So when Neil came in on board, I actually approached him on behalf of Julie, because there's a few managers before, obviously, Neil, that came in place. Gordon Staniforth, Glenn Harris, John Buckley, to name a few. And Emma Coates, one of those as well, for a short period of time. And Neil obviously brings a massive reputation of the game from an ex-pro footballer. He's managed at Leeds United in the men. But he had a definitely love for the women's football game. Very empathetic. When he came in, he pulled me into the assistant role due to, because of my experience in the women's game, he just said, I wanted to lean on, you know, you in terms of how we bring that team together and how it forms. But we had some good players. You know, the it was very such a score squad because obviously the funding at Doncaster Rovers Bells at that time wasn't big. It never has been, never will be. The challenge of that was obviously competing in the what was then Championship. Sorry, WSL 2 is now a Championship. Of we knew that when we got to the end of this end goal of fantastic season of winning league by 10 points, probably about a month before the season finished, we knew that that would never get promotion to the WSL because of the funds that that carries with that and the criteria. So the challenge of that was really big, but I feel that my time there, definitely in my five-year spell at Doncaster Bells, has definitely brought me into a leadership role. I wouldn't have that opportunity if I didn't go to Bells, and I feel that that's just down to the, you know, the ethos of the club. It's such a family thought club. You know, Tash has played there. We've had some fantastic players crew from there. We're actually standing on the shoulder of giants if you talk about what Doncaster Bells has formed. And if, in Tom's history, that's where the women games, if I think, has bled from, you know, like in terms of Arsenal, Man City, Man United now, you know, the top clubs that's come in. You've got to look at back at where that all started. And for me, it's definitely Doncaster Bells.
So 2013 is the year that the club got demoted. So Tash, for you, like, what do you remember about this sort of era?
Yeah, it was tough. I'm not going to lie. I was at Liverpool at the time, had really successful couple of years there. And then my partner, Becky, was looking for another club and she got offered a contract at Doncaster. And, you know, I didn't want to be away from Becky, if I'm being completely honest. So I decided to make the move with her. You know, I knew it would be tough because they'd just been promoted to the top league. But I was excited by the plans, the developments of a new training ground. Yeah, some of the players that they were looking to bring in. I thought it would be quite a hungry and young squad. Unfortunately for me, my time there didn't really work out how I was hoping. But, you know, I don't regret it. You know, I met some great people along the way and the likes of Julie and me have become good friends. And, you know, I knew Julie even before then, you know, and they had good intentions there. Glenn Harris, you know, I still keep in touch with Glenn, but it just wasn't for me. You know, so I actually left. I think I only ended up playing 3 games and I was only there for a couple of months. And sadly, then the team got relegated. But I think the question that I'd like to ask you, Julie, is especially in that time, that year, with obviously the new kind of, you know, all the plans for the new training ground and how it didn't really work out or pan out how none of us were hoping, really. Do you have any regrets, or do you kind of, if you could have your time back again, would you have done anything different potentially? Or do you think, you know, you look back and think, do you know what, it was out of our hands, like with that period?
I think 100%, I think out of our hands with that period, because we only, you know, looked after the football bit and the players. There's only so much you can control because, as you know, working in and being in women's football, you know, we just want to know what's going on the pitch and making sure everything's happy with the coaching side of things. In some of my roles that I've taken now, we've obviously been at Liverpool for 5.5 years previously, I have got more strategic role and understand now what that criteria I have to maintain. I think we, you know, we all sat down in that meeting, as you know, we sat there and we got sold the dream of what it could look like and we saw the plans and the structure. It was exciting times and the promises that was given to us to look. For me, I thought we've got a club here that we can work with the future. But as things happen, and it's not just on Castle Bells, this has happened to, I've mentioned before, happened to lose United Ladies back when, you know, Ken Bates took over. He pulled the funding then. You've seen it with Reading yourself, Tash, you know, being there, you know, the Coventry, unfortunately, it's still happening. And I think it's just down to personnel in the club. If they're really behind women's football, unfortunately, it's not a, you know, an income generation tool as it was then. It is now, obviously, the, you know, the funding there. But in terms of regrets, I think for me, I think there's lots of lessons learnt that, you know, that we've gone through. It only makes you a better person and a better player, a better person, a better leader. I think I've taken everything that we learnt back then, which was the negatives and the positives of that, and obviously brought into what I'm, you know, impacting in the future as well, to be honest with you. So I think no regrets, but definitely I would have hoped things have turned out obviously a little bit different, who would have known. But I think where the game's evolved to now, Tash, as you know, I think it was only going to be a matter of time before this happened, because, you know, I think the issue is now going forward, it does worry me a little bit that we're too heavily reliant on men's clubs to fund the women's football. That's great, but as you know yourself, it only takes somebody to turn round at that club. If and like look at Man City, where they are at the moment, fantastic support, fantastic infrastructure. But what happens when the investigation starts in them 115 cases, for example, if that comes to a conclusion, is a funding situation, a funding decision made, we know what's going to happen with the women's team. We've seen that historically. So
yeah, you even see that with like Everton. You know, Everton men struggling at the moment. If they get relegated, what happens? We see what happened at Reading. You know, it is. We always talk about how the women's game, it has moved on and it's great. But like you said, I think fundamentally there still are a lot of things wrong.
I remember what an outcry there was when Donny Bells were demoted. I think the football loving community at that time were outraged. You had people like Vic Akers, didn't they? They described it as morally scandalous that it had happened. And the reasons that were given, I don't think the average football fan would have understood, Julie, to be honest. You know, failed reapplication based on strict financial criteria. So essentially, there's criteria set in place by the FA at that time. In order to be a WSL club, you had to have a certain standard of training facility, a certain standard of facility to be able to host matches. And fundamentally, what you're saying to us is that the club had sold you that dream as players and coaching staff that that would be available, but it wasn't. The finances weren't given forward. They weren't producing what they promised. Is that the key?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say that really, because that's quite an easy way to and a simple way to explain it, isn't it? But when you go back and you look about how so many people in that club worked so hard to get that criteria in place, because it was, in some respects, an unachievable criteria, because where Doncaster Rovers Bell sat. Well, obviously, you're looking at clubs like Manchester, like Man United, other doing it in different ways. It was in a simpler form of that, because they had the infrastructure there, they had the backing of the club, they had all the infrastructure in place in terms of financial support, not just funding, but we're talking about resources here as well, in terms of marketing support. Club Doncaster at that point was obviously very much, and it's we look at where Doncaster Rovers are in the league in terms of the men's structure as well, you know, they're not affluent like the other clubs are. So I think going back to it, I want to say sold the dream. I think we've got told and we've got explained that this would happen in the future. But, you know, these things cost money. And I think we also, you know, we need to understand that where the club sits, along with Club Doncaster as well. But yeah, but going back to that time, thing is with the FA, I think there was been two league restructures, I believe, in my time when I was at Doncaster Bars and at Leeds. And that's Liverpool, actually, where you could actually, it was an open application. So all clubs in that league had to reapply. It wasn't just Doncaster Bells, it wasn't Manchester coming in. There was kind of a backstory to that. So it was the open process for all leagues. So it could be where anybody, like it was Man City, who even wasn't playing in that tier of football at all, even in the football pyramid, could just come in and form a team, form a club, apply. And if they hit the criteria that the FA stipulated, they could play in the WSL. But obviously, there's obviously infrastructure in place in that. So
and not getting it through football.
Yeah,
means.
Yeah, 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 100%, 100%. Yeah. So that's kind of a way. You can only ask the FA why they opened it up at that time. I don't know. It was a restructure, I'm assuming, in terms of looking at how the league was formed. And obviously, like you said, it impacted Doncaster Bells massively, because I think everybody knew that we would struggle. The club knew we would struggle to apply for that, if I'm being honest. Internally, we knew some unachievable aims here that we would never meet due to financial restrictions. So,
do you see that now, Tash, as necessary? A necessary evil, if you like. You know, nobody likes the fact that Donny Bells, who'd been there for so long, had achieved, had done all the football part, then their place was taken by Manchester City, who just swept in, really. You know, they had the money, but they hadn't got any of the pedigree. But do you think it was necessary in order for us to be where we are now?
I don't necessarily think the way it happened was right. I think that I struggle with that. It's hard, isn't it? It's like a double-ended sword. You want the women's game to go in the right direction, so you need that stability. You need them clubs that you know can grow the women's game in the right direction, but you also have, especially from the era that I've come from, that emotional connection with the beautiful game, and your Donny Bells was one of those teams. And I think then it kind of makes me a bit sad now that I wouldn't even be able to tell you truthfully what league Donny Bells are in now. You know, that's how sad it is, you know, fourth. So, and Granny's telling me that I didn't even know. So I think, you know, and I go back to Liverpool Feds and harp on about it, but they're in tier three. And even if we did get promoted to the Championship, which potentially in the next couple of years we could, you know, I think what, we're fifth, sixth in the league. But even if we did get promoted, we wouldn't be able to survive. And I just think, how can we be in a position, the way the women's game has grown and women's football and women's sport, that a team in tier three, so a good level, can't then get rewarded, can't even have aspirations and get it promoted. So those players are basically playing week in, week out, thinking, truthfully, we don't want to get promoted because we wouldn't be able to survive. We haven't got the money, we haven't got the facilities, we haven't got the support. I just think that's so sad that we're in that kind of world. And this is why I harp on about the grassroots side of football. Financially, money has to be getting put more into that, because we go on about the Lionesses, we're putting money into the WSL, we're putting money into the Championship. It has to feed down, because, you know, in probably the way the women's game is growing as well, in 4 or 5 years' time, I think the gap is going to be even bigger than what it is now, which is too big. And I think that does worry me.
Well, when the Premier League formed, there was a worry. That's why parachute payments were introduced, wasn't it? Because the Premier League formed and everyone, well, it was the Premiership at the time, and everyone was worried that the old Division 1-2 status, it might have a knock-on effect with the rest of the pyramid, certainly the second tier. So they introduced the parachute payments. So is there something wrong there, Julie, in your mind, in the structure of the prize money on offer? So the prize should be bigger for winning on a football pitch than it should be for what you've got away from the football. So if you've got all the coffers in the world in a safe, but you haven't got the pedigree on the pitch, do you think that would help protect it if the reward? So when you were talking, Tash, about Liverpool Feds, if they knew that they were going to win a certain amount of money, that would mean that they would be stable for the first season that they got promoted. Is that how it gets addressed?
I think there's two questions there. I'm just going on Tasha's point there in terms of Feds. You're right, there's so many good clubs in lower tiers, in tier three, four. So, like, for example, tier four, you've got Doncaster Bells and Leeds United, who was bearing in mind competing, and actually, you know, they've won trophies in the past, and Julie Chipchip was part of that again. But just going back to Tasha's point in terms of the money's got to come down, you're right, it has to do, but it won't. And you know what that is? Purely because of how we're developing talent in this country. You've got the league system in place now, obviously a tier one down to four, and below that as well, you've got grass community clubs, but more importantly, you've got academies forming now, PGAs, which the FA have put money into to develop players, and that is for the England pathway, and rightly so, because if we didn't have that, we've got to be, you know, we've got right here, if we didn't have that in place, we wouldn't be able to compete like we do, or now how we're doing on the big stage in the world, you know, world stage with England Lionesses. So for me, I'm like a little bit torn, if I'm being truthful, because I've been part of that process, run the academy at Liverpool for 5 years, you know, the success of developing players into the first team, but more importantly, into the other leagues, by the way. So, you know, they're not just going into the first team. There's probably one or two per season that'll go through that, but then the knockout effect, you'll have players going into Championship, you'll have players going into the Northern Premier, and the standard. So hopefully that should see the standard rising. But in terms of funding, I think because there's so much we want to, you know, progress in the women's game, where do we start? We're still so far behind where we want it to be. Even though we've got fantastic infrastructure in the women's talent pathway now, which is great, and some of the clubs are doing the same, in terms of off-pitch and professionalism, in terms of resource, how that structure looks, there's still a long way to go. There's still a long, long way to go in terms of professionalising that off the grass, so to speak, as well. We talk about the leagues, you know, like the Feds, obviously I know Tash is involved in. I've been doing little bits over in Leeds when I've been down there with Leeds United. And there's so many good people there that you know that if there was a little bit more funding, but again, they're reliant on the clubs. So we're coming with like this situation, we're just going around in circles and thinking, what's the best thing to do? At the moment, the FA feel that's the structure, that they feel that they're going to develop players for the future, for the England talent pathway and obviously the structure of the WSL, and hopefully that will feed down into tier three and four. Well, let's see what happens in the future with that.
Tash, before we wind this up, I was just going to mention Manchester City because we've already mentioned them, but they were the team that took Donny Bell's place in effect. And now we've been talking on our main show about how they're potentially our favourites for the title, which is saying something when you look at the way that Chelsea have performed in recent years, but it's certainly going to be a bit of a shootout between those two. I mean, do you think there's any bad blood left over with that? You know, and when, what I mean by that in a rivalry fan way is if Donny Bells met Manchester City in an FA Cup run in the future, do you think there'd be some needle with that?
Do you know what? Truthfully, probably no, because I think that probably a lot of the players and coaching staff that were involved back then aren't anymore. And I think actually it's funny that things can be easily forgotten in women's football, especially with the way the game has grown. I don't know, Julie maybe could tell you more than me, but I think credit to City as well. When they got their opportunity, they did do it the right way. They've grown the team. You know, I remember when I was at Liverpool in the first season we played City, though, they didn't just like throw money at players. You know, they had maybe a couple of star players come in, your Tony Duggins, your Jill Scott. And then year on year, they grew and grew. And they built similar to like United. And then look, you can't fault what they've done now. The way they've grown women's football in general, not just at City, you know, the way they've developed players. It's definitely a positive thing now, but it does make me sad. And I'm sure Julie and obviously my partner Becky, who played for Donny Bells back in the day when they were very successful. It's sad, isn't it? It'd be like me now, Liverpool being in this situation, you know, that would really hurt me. I remember how much it hurt me seeing Liverpool get just relegated into the Championship, let alone Division Four. So I think that would always have a little bit of a sadness in my heart. But again, you know, it's the beauty of the beast, isn't it? It's the way the women's game's going. It's only going in one direction. And unfortunately, you either sink or swim. And I think we're going to see it more in the future. You know, you look at the likes of Bristol City, pretty much going to be relegated this year. Can they then step up and survive again? You know, having not got a male club really attached to them or a big male club. Same happened at Reading, team that was in the top division for the last 8 years, get relegated. All of a sudden now they're semi-pro. So I think it's something that really we're going to see for probably a few years moving forward.
So just to finish off then, Julie, you know, in terms of lessons, you've already spoke about lessons learned, but what do you think clubs can be doing now? You've already alluded to the fact that this reliance on the men's finances is probably a dangerous thing. So what can clubs be doing to avoid what happened to Leeds United, what happened to Doncaster Bells and many others along the way?
I think, to be honest with you, it's going to be a long process because, you know, we still have to rely on the men's club. We've got to be honest. We have to do because that's where the resources are. It's not just about money. It's not about, you know, financially. It's like that resource and that connection with the club. I feel that if they're intertwined and now Liverpool have got some good process going and strategy of how they're working now because they've actually blended in the women's team right into the club where it was very much on the outskirts of it. I can only give you that example. We've been there for 5 years. Tash, you'll know this now, being, you know, within the club environment as she is now within her role and coming back from when she was obviously here, how it's changed and developed. So I think you've seen things and it's not going to change overnight. It's going to be baby steps, small wins, small gains every time that we move forward in the game. But we want to make sure that we have the infrastructure in place. I don't think we're going to see anything massive changes overnight, but I would like to see, definitely with the new league coming into respect and the new governing body in effect coming in the future, which is going to be obviously forming in the next year or so, the owners of that. I feel that the next step now is to come quite more independent in the structure. And I feel the business plans that's put in place, strategic plans put in place within clubs, will definitely have that forethought in mind, because I'm sure the men's club will not continue and continue and continue from the women's side without revenue and income generation into that as well. But because where the women's game is going, I feel that's going to be not so far away, because if you look at, you know, the crowds that's coming now, and you know, it's fantastic. I mean, I never thought in my time of playing that I would ever see the crowds that attending games, not just, by the way, derbies or even the FA Cup finals, for example. But you're seeing enough 30,000 just for some games of a lower level game. So I think that's in itself is progressing. But I think for me, it's definitely looking at how we can support the women's teams inside well-established men's and world-class organisations to help become self-sufficient in some parts of that development that they're doing as well. Obviously, in case you have that drop-off of the men's team.
Oh, thank you very much for your time. That's brilliant. Really appreciate it.
No problem at all.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.